This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear, at length, from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry, with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. I know a lot of our listeners fire up episodes while they're stuck in traffic or taking the dog for a walk. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry friend Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind landmark projects. You can find that at dsprojects.podbean.com. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Kristen Russell jokes about Arrow being a massive company that few people even know about. With $24 billion in annual sales and some 18,000 people walking around with Arrow on their business cards in 90 countries. She runs Arrow Intelligence Systems, which does everything from design engineering and integration services to global logistics. One of the key areas for the business unit is digital signage, and while Arrow has been on the edges of the industry for a few years now, it got a lot more involved when it acquired Seneca Data a couple of years ago. The company picked up a tech firm highly respected in the industry for its media players and its video wall servers. We met recently at Seneca's offices down in Syracuse, New York, and got into a lot of things in our chat. Russell talks about how Arrow is very different from traditional distribution companies, and how the company mantra is to be thinking and working on ideas that are 5 years out and real. We get into her background as CIO for the state of Colorado. Among her accomplishments in that gig was attracting Arrow to Denver, with no sense she'd be up there running a division one day. We also talk about her being a global president of a fast-growing company in an industry that is still overwhelmingly male. Kristen, I think the first thing to do is just for people who don't know much about Arrow, it's a giant company, but it's one of those giant companies that it's, I don't want to say it's in stealth mode, but it's maybe not as well known as it should be given its scale and everything. So let's start with that. Just tell me, what is Arrow all about and what's the scope of the company?
Yeah, I always joke that Arrow is the largest company that no one has ever heard anything about. Mm-hmm. You know, Arrow was founded in 1935, and we started the business in Manhattan on Radio Row. And literally, it was about buying and selling radio parts.
Really?
And then repairing those radios, like when radio was like the killer app, right? And we got our start there, but the company has truly matured so significantly over, you know, that long tenure of history. And we actually did a study a couple years ago that said by the time that you get your first morning cup of coffee, you've probably touched something that Arrow has been a part of seven times. And, you know, we started out as this, obviously, radio parts, but then as technology changed, we changed as well, and then started to distribute component technologies. Well, today, Arrow, through a series of acquisitions and also just strategic organic directional changes, we now are a platform company that provides everything from sensor all the way to sunset. So we're the only company in the world now that can help companies source product, integrate product, which is what Arrow Intelligence Systems does, take that product through the channel, through our ECS division, and then recycle and recover the value of that product at its end of life. Mm-hmm. So what's phenomenal about what's happening with Arrow is that we really want to be that company that is thinking 5 years out. You may have heard of that slogan phrase that we started, you know, a couple years ago, and people always ask me, what does 5 years out really mean? Mm. And we feel that it's that tangible future. It's that place where people can think about and go, what do I need to be doing 5 years out? And Arrow is really an enabler for our customers to be thinking along that time horizon from possible to practical, making sure, because if you think more than 5 years out, it's like, what's going to happen in 10 years?
Nobody knows,
right? Mm-hmm. So we've really transformed and we're continuing to evolve, even different things like financial services, where we weren't really in the financial services business. Well, now we're in the financial services.
In what way? So you would do leasing?
We provide leasing and different types of, you know, payment and, you know, financing options for companies. And that's especially important in like IoT.
Right. Is that a function of just making it easier for the sell?
Yeah, it is. And then it's also important because as companies are trying to pivot and kind of redefine who they're going to be in the future, mm-hmm. a lot of them need that financing support that a Fortune 118 company like Arrow can provide to them and be that kind of solid foundation for them to help them get to market faster.
Mm-hmm. And how big in terms of revenue and numbers of employees is, because it's a big damn company, right?
Yeah, it's a big company. We're nearly $24 billion and about 18,000 employees, roughly, on a global scale.
Mm-hmm. Based in Denver?
All over the world. Yeah, headquarters.
Right, headquartered
in Denver.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where you are.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story. So we were headquartered in New York. That's where we got started on Radio Row in Manhattan. And several years ago, actually in 2011, I believe that the headquarter move was to Denver. And having lived in Colorado most of my life, I was thrilled to have this, you know, large Fortune, you know, company that landed in Colorado. So mm-hmm. it was just very serendipitous.
And at that point, you were with the state of Colorado government as what, the CIO? I think?
Yeah, so I worked for Governor Hickenlooper, who's still in office. And he hired me to be the chief information officer for the state of Colorado, as well as being responsible for the secretary of technology role. And that role was really to help attract new tech companies and tech workers to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started looking around and saying, you know, we want some of these anchor tenant Fortune companies to be moving their headquarters to Colorado. So I was actually part of the team that was originally speaking with Mike Long to help convince them to come to Colorado. Now, the fact that I'm now at Arrow is a little bit of chance and luck that we just ended up meeting again at a point in time. Mm-hmm. But I'm thrilled to have Arrow in the home state of Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Panasonic brought a big office there too as well, right?
Yeah, there's been actually several companies that have come to Colorado, and it's an interesting thing that's happening. It's kind of the Silicon Mountain of the tech community that's emerging in mm-hmm. Colorado. And partly it's because there's such an inflow of talent. So it's one of the number one migratory spots in the country for 25 to 35 year olds.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor and the cabinet, we were all very invested in making sure that Colorado was, you know, an easy place to do business.
Sure.
And doing things around startups as well as mature companies and enterprises.
Mm-hmm. So the intelligence systems side of the business, you run that.
Yeah.
What all does that encompass?
Yeah, so we help companies with the design, the actual manufacturing build, and the delivery of intelligence systems.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of companies today are focused on more of one aspect of it. So they'll either know software more than hardware, or they'll know hardware more than software, and they can come to us and we'll actually help them do the design.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll help them take it from prototype to production. And we do that through design engineering services, but then we have integration manufacturing facilities across the world
mm-hmm.
that we can integrate in. And then we also will help them deliver that to their end customer. And that can be white box so that, you know, you mentioned at the beginning that Arrow's not well known. We kind of pride ourselves on that. We pride ourselves on the fact that we're in the back office helping our customers be successful in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And Arrow Intelligence Systems does that through these types of services. But as I just described, it's very, very different than, you know, traditional Arrow. We do something very unique mm-hmm. within the Arrow portfolio.
And how do you define intelligence systems? Like, what would be a typical intelligence system? Obviously, digital signage is, but there's, you know, an endless parade of other things that you could lump in with that.
Yeah, so there's three main areas that we focus on mm-hmm. within Arrow Intelligence Systems. One is kiosk self-service.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect is digital signage, as you mentioned. and visual technologies. And then the last one is attached embedded compute. And so those are the three main kind of technology areas that we compete in and that we go after business in. And, you know, really, I joke we've been doing IoT before IoT was cool, right? So, you know, we've been embedding and putting together intelligent systems for a very long time period within AIS. And it's exciting because now there's lots of companies out there that are trying to connect things and create different types of systems to feed data back into the company so that they can make better business decisions. And we're really at the forefront of that. I always say that, you know, we're the makers of the things of the Internet of Things. Mm-hmm. And so that takes its form in those three areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting times now because you've got all these connected devices and you absolutely have to get them working together.
Yeah.
And if whatever you're doing is very, very siloed, and particularly in digital signage, if you're not talking to other systems and getting content triggered by other systems and so on, you're way behind the curve.
Exactly. I've always said that, you know, IoT is, without a business case, is just a science project that you're wasting money on. I mean, you really have to be thinking through not just connections to connect for connection's sake or building that next cool thing, the silver ball rolling across the table, but what is the end result that you want to derive from that insight? And it's got to be really based back in the business. Are you trying to grow revenue? Are you trying to reduce cost? Are you trying to reduce reduce risk or increase in compliance? It has to be deeply seated in that. And the more that we can help companies really think through that progress and that evolution of technology, I think it's really important.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
The whole intelligent systems thing, I think, concerns a number of people for security reasons, for reasons of things going off the rails, literally. In some cases, is that part of your charge?
Yeah, we're one of the vertical markets that we specialize in is security, and it's both physical security as well as cybersecurity. Because as you just stated, the more highly connected the world becomes, the more there is an importance around the efficacy and the security of that data that is being transmitted. And we're working with companies today, examples on security surveillance systems that are saying that's great, but that data has to now be secured.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure that the software is in place, that there is, you know, rigid protocols around making sure to secure that data. So that's a hugely growing area for us, and is absolutely part of the value proposition that we, and the great thing about being a part of Arrow's ecosystem is that our ECS team partners very heavily with the top security, software security, you know, suppliers in the world.
And ECS is an acronym for?
ECS is Enterprise Computing Solutions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So many acronyms, so little time.
Exactly. Or too much time to come up with another acronym.
I wanted to go back to what Arrow does. And distribution is one of those areas that is, I don't want to say it's core to what's going on in digital signage, but it's not terribly well known.
Yeah.
And what you described in terms of what AIS does and what I think of as a traditional distribution company are wildly different. You're stretching your hands out.
Totally different. Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because aerointelligence systems really grew out of what was the core of the distribution business. Mm-hmm. So the core components part of Aero, they were selling component parts to major companies, right?
Yeah, and you have people taking orders.
Exactly.
You have a big damn catalog.
Exactly, and it's classic distribution. Mm-hmm. Well, AIS grew out of companies saying, hey, if I buy this part and this part, can you assemble and integrate them? Mm-hmm. And so it almost grew out of a customer need and request because the business that we're in within AIS is sometimes it's complex, right?
Yeah.
People don't necessarily want to put things together, integrate them, manufacture them, take it from, you know, one, you know, finished good to 100,000 and then do that on a global scale.
And typically they're not going to be very good at it.
And so AIS really started out of that, and it mm-hmm. was called the OEM Computing Solutions Group. Mm-hmm. And when I came in, what I recognized is that, yes, we do sell to many OEMs, but our customer base is really expanding. So mm-hmm. we're expanding into enterprises, enterprise healthcare companies that have been building a certain solution within their enterprise for years and years, mm-hmm. and they've said, well, wait a second. We're a healthcare company. Why are we in the manufacturing and global logistics business? Mm-hmm. Let's get back to our
core. Stick to our knitting.
Exactly. We have ISVs now that really are saying, I don't want to be in the hardware business at all. Mm-hmm. My focus is on the software layer, and I need hardware to run my software, mm-hmm. but can you help us in putting that together? And better yet, we'd actually like you to just provide a catalog of hardware platforms that we can run our software on. So what I recognized is that, one, this business is a growth business for Aero's portfolio because we see a fairly large addressable market globally for the services that we provide. And so Aero made the decision to separate it out, and it became its own business unit.
Okay.
And when I came in, I rebranded the organization as Aero Intelligent Systems mm-hmm. because we were kind of this little startup within, you know, this massive distribution company. And to your point, we did things very differently. We did a lot of different things than what Aero historically had done.
So you've got your own P&L and everything else?
Own P&L, own operating model, mm-hmm. you know, distribution or logistics and manufacturing integration centers globally, our own sales team. What we're trying to do at the corporate level is really make sure that we are connecting across those lines. Mm-hmm. Because when we can go in with the full value proposition of Aero to a customer, It's pretty compelling.
Right.
For example, our end of life business, which is called Sustainable Technologies. You know, when I go in to a customer with that part of the business and we say we can help you build it, and they actually can help you, you know, unbuild it and make sure that the data is fully taken off that system, that we recover any revenue or value in that system, that's a pretty compelling value proposition to customers.
Yeah. Is there a delicate dance that you have to do because as you become more of a end-to-end service provider, solutions provider, you've got systems integrators and other companies who are typical Aero customers who are saying, well, now you're in my business.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you handle that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think that the world economy today is full of you know, these, I'll call them blurred lines, but this mm-hmm. cooperation type of aspect where, you know, you're a supplier on one side and you're a competitor on the other side. And I think that it is becoming a little bit more complex in terms of the relationships that we have across the entire ecosystem. But that just means that we have to be very clear about when we are competing and when we are cooperating mm-hmm. and how that works. And the reality is, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the global TAM on this type of business is very, very large. It's about $230 billion. Mm-hmm. So there's enough to go around for all of us to be able to healthily compete and cooperate within, right. you know, this market.
Mm-hmm. We're sitting in Seneca's offices. You guys bought this company, what, a couple years ago now?
About 3 years ago.
Is this the primary sort of foothold bridgehead within digital signage?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the acquisition of Seneca was very strategic for us from a couple of different perspectives. Number one, they had a foothold in some very key markets for us, digital signage, as you mentioned, security, as well as broadcast media entertainment. They definitely had, you know, a compelling value proposition, but also market penetration in those areas, which was interesting to us. I think the other thing that Seneca really brought was the talent of this organization from an engineering standpoint.
Yeah.
And then I'd say the third thing is just their intimacy with their customers. And, you know, what we recognized early on is that the relationships that Seneca had established with our customers was very deep and really helped to explore the value proposition of not only Seneca, but now Aero. The engineering talent, I really can't understate the importance of that for my business today and in the future. Mm-hmm. When we look at the vertical markets that we're going into, and there's seven of them that we've identified, it's Seneca's expertise in helping to bring productized solutions into those markets that is so key for our strategy going forward.
Mm-hmm. Because end users are looking at other commodity stuff or really well engineered QA'd stuff.
Exactly. I mean, when I was a CIO, you know, I wanted best of breed. I just didn't want to mess around with the integration, right? Mm-hmm. That was the difficult part of it. It was the integration and then getting those systems out there into the market. And so the more we can help companies do that more effectively, the better off we'll be able to partner with them.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to make more noise in this market?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm all about making noise. I don't shy away from much.
Mm-hmm. So you won't be, you will be less of a well-kept secret.
Yeah. I mean, I really feel that the time is right for AIS to really grow within Aero. And when I came on board, Mike Long, who's our CEO, I said, you know, what are the three things that, you know, you want me to focus on? And he said, grow AIS, grow AIS, and grow AIS. And so
okay, then.
Yeah, exactly. Crystal clear. Crystal clear. And so far, I have to tell you, it's been great because I think that we've hit on something that's really needed and desired in the market.
Mm-hmm. Now, I went to the Seneca event last night, and it's like every other digital signage event I ever go to. It's a whole bunch of guys and a handful of women. You're running a global company. And it's unusual.
Yeah.
And you've obviously been in the space in the IT space for a long time. What's the challenge for women in this industry, and why are there so few? And do you see that changing?
Yeah. So I always say that, you know, that song, "One of These Things Does Not Look Like the Others." that would probably be me. You know, it is difficult. And as you said, I've been in technology for 20 years. And even as CIO and in IT fields, there were not a lot of women. And there's lots of data that suggests why that's happening. But fundamentally, it's really important for any sort of, you know, diversity and balance issue to be able to look around and see people that look like them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, unfortunately, I think we have a long way to go, obviously. You saw at the event last night, and that's not atypical. But part of it is making sure that we're attracting more women to the space and that they can see their career not only start, but flourish and excel within an industry. I think it's critical, not just because I obviously represent women in technology, but this concept of diversity and having different people come to the table is critical. It's a critical ingredient to innovation.
Mm-hmm.
So if everybody looks the same and they all came from a similar background, they only have their own bias and perspectives to be able to offer on the table. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to me. I was just actually at a conference a couple weeks ago. The Economist did a conference in Berlin talking about innovation and how companies are really grasping at how do we innovate. And from my perspective, it's about getting diversity around the table. And there's data that suggests that the more diverse your leadership team is, the more diverse your engineering talent is, the more diverse your sales talent, the more returns and benefits that you'll have, not only just, you know, in better, a better work environment, but actually in bottom line results.
Mm-hmm. And is there, do you think there would be a different perspective on even product development if there were more women involved at
Absolutely.
The table?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, they know that. So, you know, 65% of all purchasing decisions are now being made by women.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a woman at the table helping to develop that product, that where it's going into a market where 65% is being represented by that demographic, you're at a loss
yeah.
as a company. So it's not about, you know, hiring diverse candidates or getting more gender balance for apple, you know, pie and motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's some real financial results that are that type of portfolio of diversity is imperative
mm-hmm.
for.
What's the stuff that excites you right now, what you're seeing in technology?
Yeah, so I'm really fascinated by AI. I think that
it's an abused term.
It is an abused term, and I think every term in technology has its time, right?
Abuse cycle.
It has the abuse cycle. It comes off and people are talking. Cloud was no different, right?
And IoT.
And IoT mm-hmm. and AI will be the same. But I think that the maturations that we're making from a technology standpoint in terms of application to real world problems and consumers is really happening at the AI level. If you think about cloud or even IoT, you know, cloud was about compute efficiency, you mm-hmm. know, kind of in the data center,
yeah.
right?
Infrastructure on demand.
Infrastructure on demand, platform as a service, all of these things. It was really mm-hmm. about how to squeeze out the efficiency mm-hmm. of compute by virtualizing and sharing workloads. IoT started to become interesting to the consumer world, but I think we're still a few years out to really see.
There's too much talk about wearables and stuff like that
yeah.
as opposed to sensors on vehicles that are really going to make a difference.
Exactly. And like I said, driving back to business insights and data-driven decisions,
mm-hmm.
which at the end of the day, if you're not doing that with IoT, you know, I would argue you're wasting money and mm-hmm. chasing after rainbows and unicorns. But AI, I think, will help us to really look at how we, you know, basically quantify and process through decision making in a much more rapid pace than we are today.
Mm-hmm.
So the advances just in healthcare, for example, are really exciting to me. Now mm-hmm. we'll see what happens. I'm a geek at heart. I don't look the part, but I'm a geek at heart. So I really am interested to see kind of how we mature this technology for real world use cases that impact people.
Mm-hmm.
Because if, you know, what I'm passionate about is technology that actually, you know, helps people and makes the world a better place.
Yeah. Yeah. When you have AI being able to look at an MRI scan
yeah.
and compare it against everything it knows about MRI scans and identify something as opposed to one radiologist or whatever looking at a scan and putting their kind of spin on what's going on, it's remarkable what can happen.
It is, and I think, you know, there's always this fear that AI is going to take over the world and we're going to have a bunch of robots maybe sitting in our two
yes.
seats at one point in time. I think
we'll be pets.
We will be relegated to pets, which, by the way, I look at my dog's life. You know, she doesn't have a bad life. I just have
you're
say.
You're willing to sign up for
it? I might be willing to sign up to be a pet. But honestly, I don't think it's about taking away the important aspect of, you know, cognitive and emotional intelligence from people.
Mm-hmm.
It is about how do we decipher and make decisions on data much more rapidly and make sure that, you know, human beings are prone to error, as you just suggested. In the medical field, that can mean life or death.
Mm-hmm.
And so us being able to rely on something to help us analyze data and do it correctly, to me, that's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the time.
Thank you so much. It's such been a pleasure to speak
Great.
With you today.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16-9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16-9 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.